It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm going to address the role of outreach and education to clinicians and public health professionals to address health disparities, specifically with respiratory disease. I have no relationship to disclose. I would note that the clinician's guidance that I'll mention near the end of this talk was the development of that guidance was supported by the EPA Indoor Environments Division. The project team for this talk and for most of the work that I do, but this talk in particular, is a multidisciplinary project team and includes Susan Conrath and Laura Cobb from EPA, Bill Turner, who's an engineer and an expert in building science, which is a very important discipline to be advancing in our trainings with our clinicians in our public health. Dr. Eileen Story, who is here today, she is Professor Emeritus at UConn and the founder of the center. She is the chief of the surveillance group at the Division of Respiratory Disease Studies at NIOSH. Dr. DiBernardo, Robert DiBernardo, is a retired allergist that works with me, and you heard enough about me in the introduction. The talk I'm going to give today, I've organized around what I call three challenges. First, what's the scope of the problem? I'm going to focus on asthma, and I'm going to highlight the disparity. Then I'm going to very briefly talk about environmental contributors to illness, along with the theme of the session on occupational environmental justice. And finally, I'm going to try to provide some examples of some educational programs and some needs. I'm sure many in the room have seen this graph. It shows asthma prevalence increasing clearly through 1995 and then appearing to level off. I would note that as the National Health Information Survey changed the basic survey design, so you really need to look at that information as two separate graphs. But looking, and you see it levels off, and you say, okay, good, we must have been doing something right. But when you dig deeper into the data, it's very clear that race and socioeconomic status bears a significant burden of the asthma prevalence. And when we talk about occupational asthma, there clearly is a disproportionate prevalence there as well. A recent study that reviewed lifetime asthma identified higher prevalences in social service organizations, education, health services, and the lowest prevalence in management, cleaning and building service, protective service. And it doesn't seem intuitive to me why it breaks down that way. So we, looking specifically at education, this graph helps us understand some of that a little bit. At UConn, we did a survey of three districts in education districts in Connecticut, in urban, suburban, and rural district, and surveyed over 700 teachers. And in the survey, we asked them, did they have asthma, and if so, when were they diagnosed? And we asked when they started teaching. And what this graph says is that, gee, they start teaching and they get diagnosed with asthma. Well, that could be explained certainly by also starting teaching, they might have more health care, so they might get a diagnosis. They might be exposed to more infectious agents when they start teaching. So the yellow bars, you could explain it that way. And again, this is just pilot data, so this is just hypotheses. But what about that peak at 12 years? An environment probably has something to do with that peak. So what is it about in schools that the asthma prevalence is higher in teaching? Let's look at children. And again, I'm looking at the data from the National Health Interview Survey. And again, we see a similar thing to what we saw with the whole population. And again, digging deeper, we see that there is real disparity and that black children, children in poor homes are much more likely to have asthma. And we also did a study a number of years ago at UConn where Dr. Story interviewed all the nurse supervisors in all the districts in the state. And a very interesting, according to the nurses, on prevalence in the kid population in the schools, we saw that the urban schools and the poorer schools had much higher prevalence. But what's interesting is that within those districts, the individual schools, in terms of prevalence of asthma, ranged from very low to very high, whether they were urban or rural, whether they were poor or a wealthy district. So there's something about the school building, there's something about the schools, which seems to, again, bring in environment. There's real gaps between black and white in hospitalization and mortality from asthma, and that gap is widening. In terms of this talk, where I want to get to education and outreach, where should we be targeting our education to our health providers? And we need to know where our population of concern is seeking care. And clearly, the population of concern is still seeking care in emergency rooms. The education that we've had on asthma, where we've encouraged go to your doctors, especially with the advent of long-acting medications. So get it in control. The white population has heard that message and has really increased in going to the physician's office. But the black population has not, and we need to improve in that area. And this graph, and I know I'm going very quickly because I have a lot of material, and I apologize if I am. The last bar in that graph, that tells us that we have to develop specific education in all these environments. We need to go to the outpatient clinics, we need to go to the physician's office, and we need to go to the EDs to reach out and improve this disparity. So, that being said, the next question is what's the message that we need to include as we develop these education programs? So let's talk about environment and respiratory disease. Clearly, you know, we all hear that the criteria pollutants outdoors has gotten better, but yet, and there's some excellent work coming out of California, and Derek is here and can tell you a lot more about it, that's shown that actually living near traffic has affected the development of lungs in kids. That is a powerful statement, and we need to address that. Other things, clearly we expect pollens to increase with global warming. The indoor environment is going to be tighter. We're worried about how that will affect different aspects of the indoor environment. Occupational exposures, those that are job tasked, we know isocyanates, we know that car body shops and other spray insulation that uses polyurethane, these are potent asthmogens. The indoor environment, there are lots of things that we need to be concerned about. I put at the end there the term building science. And I can't stress enough how important it is in our education that we bring in this concept that building science, which takes the environment, climate, you know, the climate, as well as how a building is constructed, how a building is operated, and puts that together with exposures. And in our trainings of folks that have access to our poorer populations, they need to understand this so they know to emphasize healthy homes. And clearly the hygiene theory has talked about how early life exposures may be protective with asthma. We need to understand the whole immune system much better. The World Health Organization, in its review on mold and moisture that came out in August of 2009, clearly brought up the importance of the damp home environments in addressing that to address respiratory disease in our poorer populations. And other studies have told us how costly it is. And what this means in terms of training with physicians is that this is an opportunity for healthcare savings. And this is an opportunity to look at the pressure on our healthcare system, on healthcare costs. Let's address the environment and its contributors. Current medical practice and attention to the environment, the National Asthma Education and Prevention Program very much identifies that exposures in the environment need to be addressed as well as everything else in managing asthma and in preventing asthma. And this is their guidance on, their thumbnail guidance on asthma management. And they certainly recognize the role of environment in exacerbating asthma. That needs to expand it into this prevention concept. I also would note that the American Academy of Pediatrics clearly talks about healthy home inventories in managing pediatric asthma. So environment is a part of healthcare. The Sentinel model, you know that somebody's exposures in their environment is affecting their asthma. Those exposures could be affecting other people. Address those exposures, and you might prevent other people from certainly, if they have asthma, from the severity, but as importantly, maybe you're going to prevent other people from being turned on to asthma. There are clinician education models that are available. NEDF, the National Environmental Education Foundation, has a lot of good material on the net that deals with, they have a program using physician champions to train other pediatricians. They have a suggested environmental history form for when in treatment with patients. There's a lot going on in medical education. There needs to be more. Environment needs to be raised in the whole awareness of its role in illness. And education, in community education, and all these vehicles need to talk about actual interventions that improve the environment. The dialogue that the patient and the clinician has is the big opportunity. And taking good occupational and environmental histories are critical. There are non-medical roles. Our public health directors, they're responsible. They're often the ones that decide the significance of environment in our schools, in our community buildings, and in our homes. The sanitarians and environmental health staff, they are the front line talking with the homeowner. They need to understand that it's not just put a dust-proof cover on your pillows. It's not just move the stuffed animals out of the child's room, but it's look at dampness. It's look at other factors. Risk communication is so critical and so difficult. And when you're talking with underserved populations, you have all kinds of factors that, gee, you may know the message that you want to give out, but you need to be able to communicate it in a way that relates to the life that folks who are dealing with this burden can deal with. Training and guidance is needed to be developed. EPA has many resources that are available. They've targeted resources for all levels of literacy and education. I'll point out from their Dusty Fun Book, which I give when I work with children's staff in public schools. I give them that book, and it helps them understand and relate to the kids, all the way to the symposiums that EPA has on asthma and tools for schools. After a three-day one of their symposiums, they have a whole message, and it's put in terms that you can go out into the community, and it involves in sharing what works in communities today on this subject. NIOSH also has lots of material that can be used to develop education programs that's really excellent, both in the area of what is the burden and also in the area of what specific exposures are workers having. And the regulatory picture isn't enough, if I can say that. It's really important to look further than just, are you meeting a particular regulation? in this field. At UConn, we have some targeted education available. I put in the back some business cards that have the website for an online clinician's course. It has guidance that's appropriate whether you're a clinician or not. We also have a hard copy. We also are very involved in capacity building out in the community. This again is the card. I would note if you, how am I doing?
3 minutes.
Oh, great. I would note that the background of the front of the card is cladosporium. The background in the back of the card is a combination culture of penicillium and stachybotrys. Because I've already been asked, because it's not on the card, that people want to know, because our graphics person did a great job putting it on the card. What's I think really important about these courses, this particular course, is that you can go in and you don't need to take the whole course. And there's a segment on interpreting environmental reports for mold and moisture, which is very, very complicated. And I think if you're a sanitarian, if you're a health director, that is tremendously helpful. I see someone shaking their head, yes. That's the first page of the course. That's what our book looks like. I still have about 100 left. It was published in 2006. It's available for free for clinicians. I think EPA may even have more than I have. I'd love to get it out there. That's the outline of the book. I want to take a minute to talk about how capacity building in the community. We're at the Center for Indoor Environments and Health. We're working with Connecticut Children's Medical Center on a Healthy Homes demonstration grant in two really poor neighborhoods, one in particular. The Upper Albany neighborhood in Hartford is quite poor. And we're working with community folks, and they're going out there and doing Healthy Homes assessments. And we developed, and the we in this case is not the Center for Indoor Environments and Health, but is the community folks, the Center for Indoor Environments and Health, and the project directors from Connecticut Children. We developed some draft checklists, and we sat down with them and said, what really works? And we go out in the field with them and get some feedback and understand what the priorities are with the folks that were going in with those healthy homes. Those draft checklists are available for any of you at the UConn Center for Indoor Environments and Health website. We are going to be finalizing them probably in the next 6 months with more feedback from the field. I am actually really proud of what's happened in this particular project with the community. This project was supported under a HUD demonstration grant. I do want to say that. And I want to say thank you to all of you for being here. Do I have time for a question or two?
Yeah, I can see question.
Any questions? The question was, how do you deal with the expense of some of the mold remediation when you're dealing in a low-income area? And it's really difficult, and that's why we emphasize the prevention. But one of the issues about the expensive fixes is getting the message that moisture, 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 and you don't want that damp environment, and you don't want the dust and the dirt, goes a long way. If indeed it's a situation where there's visible mold and there has to be major construction, the message then is to protect the individuals who have symptoms and who are exposed. And so to give them guidance that they need to not be there during the remediation. They need not to be exposed while that material is removed. And then to work with the health departments to try to see what funds are available that can be provided for that remediation. But it's very difficult. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paula.